Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames, Iowa. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We are glad you have joined us around our kitchen table today. Donna, did you remember to set your clock ahead?
No, but if you use Apple, or maybe all the computers do this, your phone automatically does it. Your computer automatically does it. So I did have to run around and change a few clocks and things like that. But
well, my body does not automatically do it.
No, I'm going, oh, we lost an hour. Spring forward, fall back, that sort of thing. There was an article on in Modern Farmer, it's a thing I read sometimes, and because basically it kept saying, oh, we do this for the farmers. Well, we don't do this for the farmers. Historically, we did it. It started during World War One, and it was to save electricity, basically. But this is no longer useful because, you know, people just turn their lights on in the morning if they want, you know, whatever. So they did a little survey about asking farmers what do they think about it. Well, here's some of the it confuses the animals, duh. You know, like you have, obviously if you're milking cows or other things, you have to, you can't change their schedule because they don't, you know, they go with the sun. And another farmer says, well, actually we need more light in the morning rather than in the evening. Another one says, it's just plain disruptive. The benefits, well, this doesn't sound very convincing, but one reader said that it was the best thing created since sliced bread. No reason why, whatever. So obviously there is some talk about not doing this anymore, and I would second that. It just seems superficial and ridiculous, and why bother, and
We grumble every year, and then we grumble in the fall.
It's exactly
something to talk about.
It doesn't, my body doesn't, most of the farmers said, listen, we have to work with the sun anyway, so it doesn't matter what time it is. We have to get up with the sun and deal with it, and, you know, and that is the reality of it. The sun does not change, okay? Thank goodness.
That's true. And the opossum that got into my chicken house didn't care that I was on daylight saving time, because he was still on the old one. And
did he eat some eggs?
Well, no, he was launched onto a chicken.
Oops.
So I beat him off, and the chicken was, it's kind of, I can't say she's not she's not healthy, but I think she's going to bounce back. So I shoosted him off, but I think his clock was not my clock, and we'll work it out eventually.
I didn't think of possums as being that predatory, but
well, they're not really. They take advantage, and there was this
opportunistic.
Chicken. Yeah, there. I mean, there's this chicken, and why not? And it's spring. And, oh, okay. Anyway, happy spring, everybody.
He did he play dead or run away?
Well, once I swatted him with a broom, which I usually do to kind of get his attention, he did play dead, which is what they do. So to get him out of the chicken house, I picked him up by his tail and threw him out of the
you
chicken
house. You did?
Well, I have done this before.
Did you have gloves on?
No. See, I can tell.
Mom is so brave. Well, oh, my goodness.
Hey, I am a vicious person when I am guarding my flock. Now, if it was...
Do they stay dead while you fling them away? Yeah, they don't try and bite you then?
No, no.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, since I beat it pretty soundly with a broom to start with. What an awful way to start a show, Donna. Let's get on to better things.
Okay.
First, I want to mention a little bit of national news here. I want to do a heads up and a shout out to the new Ukrainian stamp. All of the nasty stuff that's going on in the Ukraine right now. And this country still has a contest for artists to send in a new idea
Wait, is this a stamp? This is a stamp in the Ukraine.
A stamp, a postage stamp.
Oh, okay.
A postage stamp.
Well, I wonder if their postal system is still intact.
Well,
I can't even imagine.
As a footnote to what I read, they're doing what they can because a lot of people depend on the Ukrainian Postal Service for things like medication.
Just like here. Hello.
Yeah. Mm. So where they can, they are doing person-to-person deliveries. They're trying their best. But can you imagine, in the middle of whatever, this huge thing that's going on, this war, okay, let's have a contest for a stamp, which kind of brings out the artists and people, and they had lots and lots of entries. This is a new postage stamp, believe it or not, to be released by Ukraine. It features, get this, a soldier giving the middle finger to a Russian warship. And it is quite artful. It is well done. Three cheers to graphic designers and painters and whoever came up with that idea.
Well, let me remind you all that Lana is a graphic designer, an excellent one. So I
picked up on that right away. So it's amazed at this sort of creativity, this sort of humor is going on in the middle of everything. So three cheers for the new Ukrainian stamp. Oh, yes. Well, it is getting on to be St. Patrick's Day again.
Coming around. Okay, and after that comes the equinox. Yay!
All this sort of stuff. Okay, we have a little bit of something from our archives here. Donna did a really good job of giving us a recipe for Irish soda bread. So let's hear this really good segment from the Donalana Kitchen Archives. We've got some Irish recipes to talk about.
Oh, yeah. So when I think Irish recipes, I have this wonderful book called The Forgotten Skills of Cooking. And this is by a chef called Darina Allen, D-A-R-I-N-A-A-L-L-E-N. And she is referred to as the Julia Child of Ireland, right? So this is a beautiful book. She's also a wonderful writer. She runs something in Ireland called the Ballymallow Cooking School, which is one of those spots that all, you know, it's worth a pilgrimage to that I have always wanted to but never been able to do. But reading the book takes you quite there. So, I mean, and it's a heavy book. It's like 700 recipes, right? So I thought, well, how can I even begin this? So I thought, all right, I'm going to pick something that traditionally Americans eat, which is not, what's the potatoes and, was it brisket?
Cabbage. And
corned beef cabbage, right? I know. I wasn't going to do that one. But soda bread is something you will see. Like right now, all the supermarkets in town have big displays of Irish cheeses and things like that. And what is the best thing to go with an Irish cheese or some really good butter, but an Irish soda bread? So I looked at her recipes, and she has three or four in them with various, you know, stories about them and options and all of that sort of thing. So this morning I whipped one up. Now, the nice thing about soda bread is it's really quick. I mean, I don't think it took me more than 7 minutes to mix the whole thing up, and then a half an hour in the oven.
Now, this doesn't have yeast, folks. You're not going to go through all that magic. No. It's really, think of biscuits, but because it has a little bit more care and kneading, it has a, it,
but not
nicer.
Much.
Not much, but
not
it,
much.
It's nicer. It's pretty.
Yeah. So she starts at this. I'm going to read a couple of things that she says in here. Her first recipe is Mummy's Brown Soda Bread. In our household of 9 children, Mummy made this bread virtually every day of her life, well into her 80s. She always had a light hand at baking. Whenever we were, her bread was one of the things we looked forward to when we came home for a few days. She made many happy memories at the table. So then later in the book, she does several variations on the soda bread. The basic thing is that it has, she's calling it buttermilk. But she says a note about buttermilk, and I found this right interesting. In Ireland, shop-bought buttermilk tends to be very thin and low in fat. So mommy often added a little sour cream or a scraping of butter from a butter wrapper to enrich the bread. This results in a more crumbly texture. Often buttermilk is thicker and much more the consistency of yogurt. If using this kind of buttermilk, which is mostly what we have here, you'll need to use more of it than specified in this recipe. If the dough is too dry, the bread will be heavy and close textured. So she also says you can use other types of cow's milk and things and just to add a little souring, you know, or something like that. So I used the kefir that I always have going in my refrigerator. And it worked really, really well. And I made this version called the Spotted Dog Railway Cake.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice name, right? I just made it because of the name. I thought, okay. It's basically a version that has raisins in it, which you'll see a lot if you buy your soda bread. But here's the thing about soda bread. It is best eaten the day that it's baked. And I started it really early this morning and I just couldn't, I dove into it and had three pieces before I even thought about what I was doing. It was so good.
Thank you for saving some for me.
Yes, right. Well, it's a full loaf, you know, but it's very good toasted. So, we did re-toast it up and, I put a little surprise in it. So here's what she says. So you can use either whole wheat flour or pastry flour. And as she says in her book that white flour used to be more expensive. So it was considered a luxury to have white flour. These days, white flour is actually probably cheaper here anyway. So I used a mix of unbleached white and whole wheat. Pastry flour, not whole wheat bread flour, which you probably could use some in this, but it's basically 3.5 cups of flour and then a teaspoon of baking soda, because that's the leavening, and a teaspoon of salt, 2 teaspoons of sugar. So it's not really a sweet bread, okay? And then I put in quite a lot of raisins. I think I put, it says 2/3, but I probably put more. So you mix all the dry ingredients and the fruit together just with your fingers, you know, till they're kind of well integrated. And then you, in another bowl, you mix 1 egg and 1 1/3 cups of buttermilk or kefir, right? So you mix the egg and the buttermilk, then you drop it into the bowl with the dry ingredients. You mix it with your fingers. She describes the, this mix well by lifting the flour and fruit up. Let's see. This adds more air. Then you put the egg in. Then you mix together using one hand with the fingers open and stiff. Mix in a full circle, drawing in the flour mixture from the sides of the bowl. Just like that.
Good.
The trick, she says, is to not over mix it. Do not handle the dough very much. Then once it's, you know, incorporated, it goes really fast. Really easy. Any fool could do this, I have to tell you. Then you spread a little flour out on the board. You dump the dough onto the floured board. Then you wash your hands and dry them so they won't continue to stick to the dough. And then you shape it into a round loaf. You really don't need it. You don't do anything. Then I did another little trick, which she suggested. Let's go back to mixing into the dry ingredients. Excuse me. This was the variation. Caraway seeds with raisins, right?
Hot.
Not sweet. Now, I am not a huge lover of caraway seeds, especially, you know, you think rye bread immediately. But I thought, yeah, this sounds sort of interesting because here's what she wrote about. She calls this the variation, the American soda bread. Caraway seeds and raisins were added to soda bread in Ireland long ago, but the tradition went by the wayside. Not so in America, where soda bread often has caraway seeds and raisins in it. Usually when I go to the U.S., I take Irish recipes there. But I was delighted to bring this one back to Ireland. And then she says, you know, simply add scant teaspoons, I might add, to the spotted dog railway cake, which is what I did. Now, the really nice thing about this is it's not enough caraway seeds that there's some in every bite. It's like you'll be eating along and you get the raisins, which you expect, and because you can see them. And then all of a sudden, there's this little note of caraway. What did you think about that, Lana?
I like caraway, and it was...
I made her guess what it was.
Oh, it was so good. And yes, the idea of having it slightly warm, you got to eat this all up right away. It's really good, and it is easy. I like making yeast bread too, but this is quick and good.
Now the other thing, one more trick, and this one is optional. Joe says it's called a chicken fryer, a very deep cast iron skillet that has a domed lid on it. So I bake the bread in that, which keeps, when you're baking bread in the oven, it actually keeps the moisture in. Mm-hmm. And so you throw it all in the oven at, I think you set the oven at 425 and then you turn it down to 400, and it's only a half an hour to bake this whole big loaf. It's really, really beautiful. Now, once you've got it in the pan ready to bake, you do this little thing, and I'm going to read from Dorina Allen one more time because this is really cute. Cut a deep cross into the bread. This is called blessing the bread, and then prick it at the center of each of the four sections to, quote, let the fairies out.
There you should.
Yeah. And the reason for that is, and that's, then it comes out baked with this cross in it. It's really quite attractive. And that is to, because it's a soggy quick bread that does help it cook more thoroughly through. So, the other thing that she wrote about, I hope I haven't lost my place. What's that pot called? Bastable.
A bastable.
She talks about, on the next page after the soda bread, she talks about, I learned to cook over an open fire from my great aunt in Tipperary in the summer holidays throughout the 50s. All of the cooking was done in the big fireplace. She says that basically before the 1950s, most country homes did not have an oven. They all cooked on a wood fire. So a bastable is an iron pot, usually with three little legs underneath it and a slightly domed lid. This is what reminded me of my cast iron. So my cast iron skillet is not a bastable because it's doesn't have the legs on it, right? Mm-hmm. But I just like the word bastable.
Isn't it nice?
It's a nice word. So something else very Irish, and I have to tell you, this bread is it's easier than making scones. It's easier than making biscuits. It's quick. It's also, unlike biscuits and scones, which require more either lard or butter or something, the Irish soda bread has very little, or, well, mine had none, just the fat from the kefir in it, which is not a lot. Now, our Irish soda bread recipe that is on the website is pretty similar. It has 4 cups of flour instead of 3.5. It's still a teaspoon of salt and 3 teaspoons of baking powder. Ah, different. Oh, mine had no baking powder, only a teaspoon of soda. Mm-hmm. Okay. A 1/4 cup of sugar Lana has here, but mine had much less, 2 tablespoons of sugar. This recipe has cardamom, but instead I put the caraway, and then 1 3/4 cups of milk and buttermilk and 1 egg and 1 cup of dried currants. So that is fairly similar. So you could try the recipe on our website if you are interested. Yeah. And it's a wonderful thing to make for breakfast because it's very quick and it makes the whole house smell really nice.
Ah,
your Irish breakfast.
There you go.
With lots of butter, or the picture in Dorina Allen's cookbook shows it with a big wedge of cheese.
That would be good, too.
Yes.
So to find out more about the Donna Lena Kitchen and to find our recipe page, you can go to khoifm.org. That takes you to this wonderful community radio station. Look for the talk shows. Look for the Donna Lena Kitchen. And we've got recipes there. And to keep in a theme here, I would like to play a bit of music, but this music starts out with a reading, an Irish poem by William Butler Yeats, and this is from a concert given by the Barnall Band many, many years ago, and the person reading this wonderful poem that leads into the wonderful music is Roger Alexander, a Barnall Band musician, and let's hear that this wonderful poem. It's called The Fiddler of Dooney.
When I play on my fiddle in Dooney, folk dance like a wave of the sea. My cousin was priest in Kilvarnet, my brother in Mochrabwee. I passed my brother and cousin, they read in their books of prayer. I read in my book of songs I bought at the Sligo Fair. When we come at the end of time to Peter sitting in state, he will smile on the three old spirits, but call me first through the gate. For the good are always the merry, save by an evil chance, and the merry love the fiddle, and the merry love to dance. And when the folk there spy me, they'll all come up to me with, "Here's the fiddler of Dooney," and dance like a wave of the sea.
Listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lena Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. A little bit of a nod for St. Patrick's Day there. We heard about Irish soda bread and music by the Barnall Band. Well, another springish things that are happening. What about seedlings? Is anybody else looking forward to gardening? I've been spending time in my little greenhouse planting things.
Little greenhouse.
Well,
Lana is serious. She provides seedlings for half the gardeners in Iowa.
No. I do seedlings for sale. And it's just, it is a fussy, lovely thing to do this time of year. And it's kind of nice to kind of get your ducks in a row and think about what you need. It is not too late to start potting or to start seeds this time of year. It's not time to put things out in the wilds of the outdoors yet, but
at least not in Iowa.
Not in Iowa, no. When you look to plant seeds, all sorts of good information is given to you on seed packets. And we have Google, and there's seed books, and you can talk to other gardeners. There's all kinds of advice, because folks, we're dealing with living systems here. Each little seed is a possibility for life there. So planting things early gives them a little jump in the greenhouse, and then things will be ready to go out after the last frost date. And in my neck of the woods, that's kind of mid-April, although you can kind of push things and put things like onion seedlings out and maybe some brassicas.
What are the more tolerant, the onions and the brassicas?
And you can put brassicas and some herbs out, but I even if you put them out, you can put a row cover over it or something like that. But onions, believe it or not, are really tough, and you can put those little things in the ground the first week of April, and then along about mid-April you can kind of start watching your thermometer. And as soon as things are, the soil has to be a little warm out there. You don't want to go sticking things in a really cold soil.
Let me ask you, because I love to do nasturtiums, right, from seed. When should I put them in?
I would wait for nasturtiums until like the last part of April, because they're a
hot weather thing. They like sun. They like warm. They like sunshine. So they're not really going to do anything until they have warm soil.
And I can put them straight into the ground. And soak them overnight.
Yep, that's
and
great.
And then put them in. Although I have to say, I think the squirrels come and eat them.
Well, they look tasty to me. I bet I'd eat them.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Last year I did a thing. I put some bird netting over the pots where I was putting them, and I did better with that. So.
Good idea. Good idea. Oh, I have a little advice, and I've given this before about starting seeds. Well, first off, how deep to plant things. Just as a rule of thumb, if you have a big seed, like a nasturtium seed, that goes in pretty deep. If you have just a tiny,
now it's pretty deep. Half inch, inch.
Think of it as about twice the size of the seed. So that's like quarter inch.
Oh, so not that deep. All right, so I'm probably planting mine deep then.
Yeah. You know, things like beans that you plant later. Big bean, they can go in the ground quite a ways, but we're talking about...
So twice the size of the seed is kind of the average...
It's kind of the average.
Rule of the thumb,
Rule of the gardener's thumb, yes. And if you notice, if you read advice on seed packets, sometimes it just says sprinkle teeny tiny salt and pepper-sized seeds on the surface and mist them. That's kind of tricky, but some seeds need a little light to germinate.
Oh, but it'll say on the
package. It should say on the seed. Okay. But here is a note. Here's a trick I've learned about soil. If you buy potting mix to put your seeds in, and that's not a bad idea because it should be weed-free, it comes out of the bag very dry and fluffy. That is not so good for seeds. They would prefer moist and fluffy. So what I do is I put potting soil in a dish pan, in a big plastic thing. Actually, the pan had a past life as a cat litter box, but I cleaned it up. About that big. I put potting soil in there and wet it, dampen it up. The peat moss takes a while to absorb the water. So wet it, and walk away.
Wait, come 15 back. Minutes or how
yeah,
long?
Yeah, 15 minutes. Come back later. Yeah. Go have a cup of coffee. Come back later, and then with your hands, mush it around. You want damp, fluffy, because seeds need air along with moisture and heat and all that kind of stuff. Get going. And if you put seeds just into potting soil and wet it, it'll start to stratify and get to,
does that mean
down.
Then, okay, so you take the damp potting soil and put it into like the yogurt container whatever you're using for the little starting pot, and then you put the seed in and you don't water after that because you've already watered the soil to begin with.
Right. At least for that first day, okay?
Okay.
And then it all depends on where you put your little seedling cup. If it's, you can tell when the soil gets dry again. Then watering
gently. Just by feeling on the top?
Yeah.
Okay.
Watering it.
So it has to stay moist. This is the part that I always make the mistake. I don't keep them consistently wet enough.
That's good though. But if you have
so you don't cover them at all.
No. Okay. If you have dampened up this soil, it's actually pretty easy to, you don't want to dump water in by the bucketful, but water it gently, and then there is already air pockets in there, and
all right,
it
gently.
Will soak
How
things
do
up.
You do you use a special watering can?
I use a watering can with a spout-like thing on the top.
Oh, a long pointy spout?
Yeah, that seems the handiest.
Or the kind with the holes in the spout.
You can use the holes in the spout, but that splatters all over.
Oh, okay. So you want the tiny pointy one like you use on houseplants.
If you're just doing a small amount houseplants. If I'm doing a big flat which has 72 little cells in it, then I can use something that spreads water a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. But anyway, think fluffy. Potting soil is generally made of peat moss, perlite, vermiculite, and a little bit of compost.
Wait, what's perlite and what's vermiculite?
I don't know.
perlite and vermiculite.
Well, one of them are those little white specks that are is something that actually holds water, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So there you go. I am not an expert on all of this sort of stuff. It's just I know what works.
Well, yeah, you do a really good job, though.
Oh, here. However, I do have the internet. So, perlite is a volcanic glass, a naturally occurring mineral, and high in water content. That's what the perlite is. Vermiculite is almost the same as perlite, but consists of silicate. That's a mineral. Silicate, mint material. Huh? And it's not white. Okay?
Okay, so is this to hold moisture
right
in the soil?
Help.
And maybe spaces to hold air in the
spaces
soil,
to
too?
Hold air.
But it's that not, helps. Like, doesn't really release minerals into the soil.
No, actually, potting soil, you don't have to worry too much about fertilizer, because all of the nutrition that, or all of the things the seeds need is in the seed for a while, until it sends up its first little shoots. It really doesn't need any extra fertilizer until it turns into more of a plant with four or five.
Well, but when you then take the plug with the plant that's grown and you put it into the soil,
then you can.
The peat moss has some nutrition in it too, doesn't it? I think it is, because it's a composted.
Yeah, if the mix has a little bit of compost, it will have some decomposed moss in it. Yeah. Moss, okay.
So it gives it a little start to the plant.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a magic time of year. And I guess the best thing I've learned is to make sure that the soil is seed friendly, which means damp and fluffy. And warm.
Okay, now, how many varieties of tomatoes are you planting this year?
Okay, folks, this is
my annual question to Lana.
Confession time. You know how seed catalogs are?
This is Lana's personal private addiction. We're just going to put it on the radio.
They're just fantastic. I have started 30 different varieties of tomatoes. Now, I cannot guarantee all of those are going to be raging successes, but I'm going to have fun with 30 different varieties.
So I'm looking forward to that Ukrainian-Russian variety that we're going to pickle.
Yeah, I am too. Now, see, that's one of those.
Something new every year.
Something new, and the seed catalogs have promised the world, of course, and so we'll see. We'll see if it stands up. Also, we'll see if it stands up in my garden in Iowa in this summer. We'll see how it does. Everything is a gamble, but hey, I don't have to go to the casino. I garden. There we go.
Never a dull moment.
Well, I have a interesting segue here. Remember how I talked about dark and fluffy potting soil? If you have any idea of what that feels like, your potting soil ideally should feel like if you made a nice big pan of moist brownies and squashed them all up. That's kind of how, it's not soggy damp, but it feels, that's how it should feel. Moist brownies, huh?
Moist brownies.
Yeah. Mm. That's a good reference. And I just so happen to have a brownie recipe I would like to share.
And she made some, so we're going to have the on-air tasting.
Yeah, you can't really do this show without at least having
some from Mike, our engineer.
A little bit of tasting here. This is called the Best Cocoa Brownie Recipe. They are super,
very nice.
They are super intense. Mm. Now, usually,
they're just short of fudge. They're really good.
Yeah. Mm. Most brownie recipes start with melted chocolate and butter and sugar and eggs and flour. That's fine, but there's a person called Alice Medrich, who Donna turned me on to. She evidently is the chocolate queen.
She's
the queen of chocolate.
Has a San Francisco store called Chocolat, I think. Multiple cookbooks, which we have referred to numerous times. Mm-hmm.
So, Alice Medrich writes this recipe. It's called the Best Cocoa Brownies, and this does not start with melted baker's chocolate. This starts with
well, starts with, includes cocoa as the chocolate.
Butter. And,
yeah, it's
I'm
good.
Sure.
Oh,
right?
Of course, butter. What she did was kind of separate everything out so she could up certain things and take down. She obviously fussed with this recipe. It's really good.
She writes very, very good recipes. They're always accurate and very easy to follow.
Yeah, she took the fat out of the melted chocolate and added the fat back in the form of butter. And with just the right amount of sugar, the crust on the top was shiny. And here's her recipe. 1/2 cup plus 2 tablespoons butter. 1 1/4 cups sugar. 3/4 cup unsweetened cocoa. 1/4 teaspoon fine salt. Vanilla, eggs, 2/3 cup, walnut, and there you go. Well, I use pecans, not walnut. Mm. Okay, but this is interesting. You combine the butter, sugar, cocoa powder, and salt in a metal bowl over a hot water bath because there's your butter, but all this other stuff, cocoa powder included, 3/4 cup cocoa powder, is kind of dry. So I put it in there, and I thought, this is never going to work. She said, keep on stirring, keep on stirring.
Oh, that's interesting. So mm-hmm. instead of melting the cocoa over the hot water bath, you're really melting the butter into
then,
the cocoa
and
powder.
And then stir, stir, stir. And this is never going to work, Alice. I thought, it looks terrible, but it finally melts and turns into this wonderful dark, dark stuff. It might look gritty, she says, but don't worry. It will smooth out later. Take the bowl from the hot water and let it cool. Then beat the eggs and beat 2 eggs, 1/2 teaspoon of
right,
vanilla.
Right, yeah, you have to let it cool. Yep, otherwise, yep, your eggs yep. won't do what they're
let
supposed
that cool.
to.
Okay, and then put the egg and vanilla mixture into the cocoa mixture. And then add 1/2 cup of flour, and she said,
"Oh, the flour goes in at the end, and not much.
Not much. Okay. 1/2 cup. That's not mm-hmm. much." And she says, "Beat 40 strokes. That is important." She said. So I did. I counted out religiously 40 strokes, mm-hmm. and then baked it at a slow oven, 325. And she said it would take 20 to 25 minutes, but in my oven, it took a good 30 minutes. You have to watch that sort of thing. But boy, did they turn out good.
Well, in the picture, in the book, she's got some large flaked salt on yeah. top of it, too.
I would have done that, but I didn't have any, so that large flaked salt is on my grocery list.
Oh, okay.
But I think that would be a very, very good thing. So there you go. So when you make your brownies, think of
potting soil.
It's all the same thing. Yes, it is. These are the best cocoa brownies from Alice Medrich. And I got this recipe from a book called Genius Desserts, 100 Recipes That'll Change the Way You Bake, by the organization called Food 52.
Oh, right. They have a big website. So
yeah.
you can probably, and they're, I think it's
yeah.
free even.
Yeah.
So you could probably go on the Food 52 website and pull up, what's her call? She's calling it Best Cocoa Brownies. Yeah. Alice Medrich.
Yeah.
You can probably find it on their website.
Yes, you can. And that is a good place to look. And anything that, if you run across the baker Alice Medrich, and there's a word chocolate after it, I think it'll be good because she does good things with chocolate and all that sort
yeah,
of thing.
And she always has good techniques. I mean, she has a very posh store in Berkeley, I think, and most of her writing in her recipe books come from things that she has made repeatedly and is selling in the store. So they are highly tested, highly reliable, and this woman knows how to work with chocolate.
Yeah. And this little, she has good hints in here, especially in the,
it look, beat 40 yeah. times, you know?
It might look gritty right about the time that I was thinking, oh, Alice, this is not going to work. But it, yeah, keep at it, and it does, and beating it extra times, and it's good. This is just a small recipe. It just made a 8-inch pan full.
So they'll be
They're
gone.
Very rich. It's enough.
Well, they'll be gone fast.
I mean, Lana has cut them, and it looks like Alice has done this in the picture too. About 1 inch square per brownie.
I think that'll pretty much do you. So
I never bet you can't just eat one, right?
Of course. But cocoa brownies, what a good idea! Yes, you're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. For more information, go to khoyfm.org. We are back. That was another Irish tune. And that's from Irish tune from a band called Four Shillings Short from their CD. Everybody remember CDs? From their CD called The Boggy Spew. And I just had to play that tune just so I could say The Boggy Spew. Happy St. Patrick's Day, folks. You know, we've been talking a little bit about eating, like we usually do, and I mentioned a little bit about seed starting and looking ahead to spring. Let's talk about things to grow and things to eat. There are some handy perennials for the kitchen garden and annuals, too. Now's the time to think about that sort of thing. Now, if you don't have a lot of room for a garden, you may have room for a pot on your patio. But herbs do not take a lot of space, and it really is nice to have something right outside your back door or on your kitchen counter.
Lana, who has a marvelous, huge, huge garden, I am a very modest gardener, but I do grow my own herbs.
Because it is really nice to go out and get something
to cook
with.
You're cooking something, you think, oh, I need a little mint, I need a little basil, I need a little lovage, you just go out, chick, chick. And there it is.
There it is. Mentioning basils, first of all. Basil.
Oh, boy.
Basil is a really hot weather lover.
How many basils are you doing, Lana?
4 or 5.
Okay.
You can get kind of overdone with all kinds of basils. But basil, unless you're going to grow it in a greenhouse, which you can do, or on a windowsill, in the garden around in Iowa, you might as well wait later to put it out, like with peppers and tomatoes, which is late April, early May, because it just doesn't do anything.
Well,
it does not
like it's just too slow otherwise?
It needs heat. It'll just kind of, like me, I like a warm sweater too. So basils are actually very easy to propagate in this potting soil, thinking of brownie mix or crushed up brownies. That kind of thing will grow.
I used Lana's already started basil.
Well, you can do that. But they do start pretty easily and prolifically, and there's all different kinds. There's large leaf basils and the Italian basils, and they're all pretty much interchangeable.
I like to do at least 3 basils. Mm-hmm. You know, your basic basil, right?
Basic.
Whichever you want, whether it's sometimes the globe basil is fun, with the little tiny leaves, or the basic Genovese basil, and there are many, many varieties. Then I also always grow some Thai basil, because you cannot buy that, at least not around here. So you can dry it. So yeah. I grow enough to use and to dry so that during the winter, if I want to cook Thai food, I've got some of my own Thai basil.
Thai basil dries. I don't know. It dries really well. I like mm-hmm. that stuff too. Yeah, there you go.
The other one I really like is lemon basil, just because I like it, which also I dry. In fact, I dry all three of the basils because the basil that you have homegrown and dried is going to have more flavor in it because it's been handled less. By the time you buy an herb, especially a crushed leaf herb, you know, at the grocery store, mm-hmm. it has been... it's been carried from God knows where for God knows when, and it's, you know, going to lose some of those volatile oils. So when you dry it yourself, and it's really, I mean, Lana uses what kind of dryer do you use?
Oh, is it called a Necco or Nesco? There's a lot of electric food dryers. I just find that
but
one.
I just tie mine in a bunch and hang them upside down, like on my curtain rods, actually. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I just, in the fall, I go out before the frost, mm-hmm. and I cut down whatever's there, and I just spread them all out on newspapers on the table and kind of, you know, every couple of days flip them over till they dry. Because then when you dry them yourself, you strip them off the branches, but you do not crush them. Because you put them in a jar and, you know, seal them up, and then you crush them just before you stir them into the food. Because the crushing releases more volatile oils. So, and that's where your flavor is. So I highly recommend, even though you can buy basil, well, you could buy some fresh basil at the farmer's market and dry that yourself mm-hmm. as well. I mean, mm-hmm. having your own dried basil is just a nice little thing.
One thing about gardening, it's a yearly thing. Things come and go. Grow basil each year because even if you dry it yourself, it's never as good as fresh out of the garden or freshly dried. So, yes, you could keep it for a couple of years, but don't do that.
You just want enough to last you through the winter. Yeah. In fact, about this time of year, I do start going through my herb jars and seeing what I have left. I mean, you know it's going to have to last you. I don't know, when can we start harvesting basil? Not till the end of June at least.
June-ish, yeah.
So you got a few more months you've got to use this up, but keep an eye on that and refresh annually, definitely.
Definitely. Also, and here's a hint. If you have a very small space, generally the basils that are called bush basil are made to, actually, they're kind of like bonsai basil. They grow really well in a pot. Their basils can get quite big, so prepare to give them a lot of room for the roots. But the bush basils, the ones that have smaller leaves, which are just as tasty, but they're kind of compact. You can look for those, and those grow really well in pots. See, another thing is parsley. People use a lot of parsley this time of year, and I do start parsley early because it's such a slow grower. Here is a hint, folks. Parsley seeds are really ornery. They do not want to sprout. So, and even it says this on the seed packet usually. Soak parsley seeds overnight.
Oh.
And then spread them out to dry a little bit. And then you'll get a little jump on things. They will come up eventually, but it just takes forever and a day for parsley to germinate. You'd be surprised. One of the things I like to do in some seed catalogs, they have little notes on how long things take germinate, and parsley can actually take up to 14 days. So you have to learn to be patient, but also soaking those seeds help a lot. Right? What other good things should you plant in your backyard?
The herbs that I put in I have two kinds, of course. There's the perennials, which we love perennials because they just come back, and once you get them in, you don't need to worry about them. So the main perennial that I have that we love is the lovage.
Yes.
And that is it does very well here in our climate, and once you get it started, it comes back and comes back. It's one of the first things up in the spring. Well, motherwort, which is a wild thing, comes up first, and I'm seeing little bits of it right now. But the lovage comes up fairly early and does outlast the frost, so it goes late, and it also does dry well. Yeah. I don't know why people are not using more lovage. It has a very nice celery-like flavor, It's, you know, it's green. It's like parsley. So it's very vibrant. And, I'm predicting now, Lana and I have been talking up the lovage for a few years. I'm predicting a lovage boom in the culinary world. I do see it more and more. And you really can't buy it. So growing it is highly recommended. So put that on your list to start it in a place where it will get plenty of sun.
Yep.
And you will have it for years to come.
Right. And I would suggest the lovage seeds. Parsley, too, is part of the carrot family. The same problem with those seeds. Go ahead and soak those lovage seeds for a while and then put them in. Put them right outside if you want, but it's a little too cold now. They need a little bit more warm. So put them in some potting mix and get it going. And with parsley and lovage, the things that are more perennial, that have a bigger root, be careful when you transplant them. They don't like to be shocked, but you can be gentle, and then you can transplant your lovage and your parsley, too. Very good.
Well, the other things that are self-seeding, those things like anise hyssop, kind of spreads wherever it wants to all over my garden. Bee balm does that, too. It pops up in the oddest places. So get some of that going. The other thing that Lana and I read in Ukrainian pickles, they put horseradish leaf. Now, I have horseradish in my garden. I don't really bother to dig up the root, though I could. But I have it there because it has these big, big, like, ornamental. It's so pretty in the garden. I don't know, what do you think? It goes 18 to 24 inches high. And they're big, kind of fluffy leaves. They're very pretty. So I recommend having some horseradish, and be good to think about putting those things, because that comes back every year, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things. Actually, in our coming shows, we can talk more about our favorite herb of the week, because I think we have a new one every week. But just basil and parsley and lovage are things you might want to, especially parsley and lovage, start thinking about now. Here's a note. There are some things that I find do not transplant well. People like cilantro and they like dill. And yes, you can start those things early. However, I mentioned transplant shock. They don't transplant very well.
Oh, so you really need to wait till you can push them directly into the soil.
Unless you have a more gentle hand than I do.
I don't even try those two herbs because they're too difficult for me, but Lana can get them.
We can try. Parsley, lovage, and think ahead to basil planting outside. Yes. Oh, well, we've talked about Irish soda bread today. We've had some Irish too. And we talked about brownies. We've been talking about garden things. Let's repeat the authors. We talked about Alice Medrich's recipe for the best cocoa brownies, and you can find her through the website Food 52. Alice Medrich. And Donna had a cookbook too.
Darina Allen is the goddess of Irish cooking in this generation anyway. Irish soda bread is from a book she has. It's called Forgotten Skills. She has something called the Ballymaloe Cooking School. It's Darina, D-A-R-E-N-A, I think, or something like that, Allen. So all things Irish, give one of her books a look. She's wonderful.
Yeah, we've done a few cookbook vacations, cookbook travels. And whenever you open a cookbook, you can kind of pretend you're in somebody else's kitchen, sometimes in a whole new country. Lots of good things happening. Donna, you've got some good news about some Donna Lana Kitchen.
A couple of things. Okay, the Donna Lana Kitchen now has a podcast version. So the same thing, we will not discontinue the radio, of course. We love the radio. But it is also available, same content, same interview every week on we're coming to you every week. So you can now listen to it in podcast form. So if you go to wherever you listen to your podcast, which is, I don't know, Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever, it's there. Just type in the search button, Donna Lana, which is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, second word kitchen, and we will pop up, hit the save button. And because of this also, we have a new Gmail address. It's donalonkitchen@gmail.com. And you can drop us a line there if you want, or Facebook.
Very good. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We can come to you live at noon here on KHOI. We had music today by the Barnall Band and music by Four Shillings Short. I have to say it again. The Boggy Spew. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Support this fine community radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.